AI will make you more productive, and because of that, your quality of life should also go up.
All right. My name is Bill Bench. I'm an operating partner at Battery. And I am, okay, so I know every podcast host always says they're really excited about their next guest. But this one is like waking up on Christmas morning. That's how excited I am. Gaurav Agarwal from ClickUp, welcome to the show today.
Thank you so much, Bill. That's such a nice way to open this conversation. I'm very excited to be here, Bill. Thank you for having me.
Me too. Super enthusiastic because you and I had the fortune of seeing each other earlier this week at a great event. And we talked a couple of times over the last month. So I know we've shared a few ideas, which is really what created the excitement for getting you onto the show. So what do you say we dive right in?
Let's do it.
Awesome. All right. So today's topic is really focused on artificial intelligence in the go-to-market. So AI and the GTM, a topic that I think is getting more and more popular right now. We've traditionally seen go-to-market leaders hire revenue operations team, and those teams evaluate tools, they purchase tools, they implement tools, and then they manage and measure and report out on those tools. Recently, though, and I'd say in the last really 6 to 9 months, there's been a strong, strong motion towards building, not the buying side, but the building side, whether that's an agent, a workflow, an integration, or maybe an entire application. And so we're really interested in what you're seeing and what you're specifically doing inside of ClickUp.
Thank you, Bill. Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting time, right? Like, especially in the last 2 years, the tools that are available for anyone who is non-technical to go build technical products, they're just blowing up. There are so many tools all the way from front-end technologies to data processing technologies. AI is literally eating up software, and that's the future. What that means is it's almost like, would you hire a RevOps person who cannot analyze data? You most likely won't. You could argue that RevOps job is not to analyze data, but to then have a systems person or a data scientist analyzing data, but you wouldn't do that. That's precisely what will happen with systems as well, where people in RevOps, people in GTM ops, whatever fancy word you might be using to call those people, whose job is to architect the best processes, technology, structure, so the GTM's team and the field teams can succeed, those people will have to get really good with building their own systems. That doesn't mean they'll build everything. I think what will happen, and we are moving in that direction, where the technical systems team as you know it today will become a deep AI builder team. They'll be very good at scripting. They'll be very good at connecting tools with each other. They would know what a workflow is versus what an agent is versus what a front-end app is. So they are extremely hands-on builders. Their responsibility would be to ensure that the platform, that there's a platform that all of the other team members can use, and they would build deep technical products. But then your RevOps team, as you know it today, will get extremely hands-on. There's this role called business system analysts, BSAs. You can call them product managers in some businesses. They will have to also become technical so that they can build on the platform that the systems team or the AI builder team has created for you. So everyone will have to get very native when it comes to building your own tooling. Just that there would be two kinds of role. The conventional IT as we know it will have to become an AI first IT team. And the RevOps as we know it will have to become, hey, cook your own meal as much as possible. But if you need like a new kitchen to be set up, then go to that AI builders team and they'll set up a new kitchen for you.
I love because I think you're melding together two things that are happening. Number one is the building part. And then number two is this shift to the right inside of go-to-market to becoming more technical. And you just talked about AI builders. You know, we're hearing about these terms, go-to-market engineers, AI builders, AI agent, or AI agent builders. It sounds like you're doing this already inside of ClickUp.
Yes, sir. We are doing that. We hire these AI builders. These are extremely bright, recent graduates. it almost works to their advantage that they are in some way so fresh because they think they can rebuild the entire world using AI. And you know what? They're right 60% of the time. Like you give them a, hey, build me a Salesforce. In 2 weeks, they'll build you a CRM that can do 60% of what Salesforce does. And what you'll realize is there are very few use cases where we need precision. What we need is speed. We need directional accuracy. So 80% software is great for most of our use cases. We don't even use those edge use cases, that edge features that come in baked that we pay for, right? So we are bringing in these AI builders and they're setting up the infrastructure and they're building complex tooling. But then on the RevOps side, my teams are beginning to use that tooling and start building agents and start building automations. And they're writing their own prompts and they're looking at the data and they're constantly fine-tuning that prompt. So it's almost like they're building the applications on top of the platform that the AI builders are building.
Have you created a structure inside of ClickUp for how you really rank and evaluate these creations of what is built? And I say that because I keep hearing that copilots and co-agents are the safe way to go. But then there's other people who are like, no, let's just like let it run wild. Like you said, like the benefit of these folks is because they haven't been taught, you know, the way to work in a corporation yet. They're just
Yes.
limitless on what they see. So I'm curious, how do you put some structure around this?
So what we do is when we bring in these AI builders, oftentimes they don't have the industry expertise. And if they don't have, like, I ask them to go build me a transcript, like, I want you to build me an AI agent that will pay attention to the call and will highlight moments that the reps could have done better or moments of opportunity for the rep to capitalize on. If you want to build that technology, just AI builder isn't enough because they won't have the business context. This is where RevOps comes in. Your RevOps will have to be able to meet the AI builder halfway there, that, hey, let's build this together. I will bring the business context, but I'm not just coming in with a document. I'm coming in with a prompt. I know how to think about AI as well. I understand the constraints around how that prompt may or may not work. But I need your help in also now stitching the different tools together so we can build a Chrome app that can real-time provide coaching to reps while they're on the call. So that's the difference. A business spec document is no longer like, hey, this is my requirement. A business spec document also has to be very AI forward, where I'm an expert in this, these are the edge cases, this is the prompt. So you can almost say like all your RevOps people will have to be good at building basic stuff, but they'll have to be really good at prompt engineering for their field. And then you bring in these AI builders, and the AI builders will work with the RevOps people to build tools that generate outcome. Now you might question that prompt engineering, eventually all the models will get very smart, and why do we need prompt engineering? What that means then is then they'll have to be really good at evaluation data sets. I think eventually all people that work with technical people and they bring a business case to life or they have a use case, you have to be really great at that use case. You need to be able to build a prompt, evaluate a prompt, look at the data set and constantly iterate on the prompt, make that prompt accurate, because we're walking into this era of AI slop where every company will have a lot of agents, but 80% of those agents would be garbage. And that is what would separate a great revenue operator from a bad revenue operator, because the bad revenue operator will go to ChatGPT and say, build me a RevOps agent, versus a great one would build me a RevOps agent that's extremely good at doing this. And you should be looking at when this happens, look at this. I think we'll see that difference emerge. Right now, everyone is just building, but we will soon enter that area of that era of slop. And then the great ones will emerge over the average ones.
Gosh, so much here. First reaction is, I think anybody watching this that is in a RevOps role probably breathed a sigh of relief at the beginning of your statements there when you said, look, that's where the combination of maybe this younger person that has a certain skill set combined with the business acumen and experience
Yes.
are really going to come together. I think that's a really critical thing. I will later in the podcast here go to talk about roles, new roles that might evolve and things like that. But I think like that last statement that you had there, Gaurav, was really, really interesting, which is I've been meeting with some companies that have very tight controls on what they will allow to be put out into the wild, so to speak, from an AI perspective. And then you talked about the other side, the companies that probably don't have that and the AI slop that will become pervasive inside of our organizations. I think that that is, I'm sure for CIOs and CISOs, something that they're very worried about is, oh my gosh, what's happening with our data inside of our organization and who's getting exposure to it and where's that going to? But then number two, I think inside of organizations, something that is a cautious area to be thinking about as well.
Yes. And I think there are three stages of this problem manifesting. First, a majority of the market today is actually not even building, right? They're talking about it, but they're not building. Those people will have to start building because there's just no world where you'll be, like, AI is a massive amplifier of your skill set. And if you don't use AI, it's like you not using hundreds of interns that are available at your disposal that can predictably do what you need them to do. So the first stage is you need to start building. Then the second stage is what, or like the first phase where the market is that they are not building. So please start building. Once you start building, you enter that next era of AI slop. That's kind of what CISOs, even as a business leader, I am concerned about, because the last thing I want is everyone just using logic willy-nilly versus I want them to use logic that is business approved. This is where a strong RevOps team will have a POV on what great agents look like. Why are they repeatable? Have we trained them on our own data? And that's where they'll have to work very closely with the IT counterparts, much like they do today, where IT would be responsible for administering those rules and creating those guardrails from a data security perspective. But data security is half the part of it. With more AI slop, you also have loose business logic flowing everywhere. Someone will also have to be responsible for, okay, these are the 10 agents that ClickUp uses. We use an agent for onboarding. We use an agent for role play. We use an agent for deal qualification. And those logic needs to be centrally maintained and owned by a RevOps team. And a RevOps team that is not AI native will do a bad job at managing that. So first start building slop. First start building, you will realize that you now are building a lot of slop. So now you will start implementing the control systems in place. And you will aspire for quality that has to be meaningfully better than the slop that has been built. And then you get into governance, where you would want your reps and your field teams and your revenue teams to be using these agents that have been centrally built and orchestrated.
This is spoken by someone that sounds like you've maybe covered some of this ground. So what a great breakdown of how to think about the stages there, Gaurav. Thanks for sharing that. It is very clear that you're going through this right now. Let me transition. I mentioned about roles. We're seeing the creation of new roles. We just mentioned that some of these new technical AI builders and go-to-market engineer type of roles. And we're also seeing the evolution of other roles that have been in business for a while, things like SDRs, things like sales engineers, CSMs. Curious to know your take on that evolution of those roles as some of these AI agents, these AI copilots, these AI applications come into the fold.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, Bill. I feel like some of these roles are just games that companies play because they want to stand out. But if you look underneath the hood enough, you find that these roles are very similar to each other. So I effectively think there are three types of roles. At the base layer, you have someone who is really good at building systems, building integrations, doing data ETLs, data transformation. They sit at that system deep technical layer. You can call them, I would not call them a GTM engineer. That GTM engineer word is misused a lot. But these people are true engineers. They could sit within IT, they could sit within engineering, they could be AI builders, as we call it. So that role will become a heavily AI-influenced role, where if you're not using AI to build systems and move and build them fast, you are going to be left behind. So that's the role at the base layer. Above that sits this role that you might call RevOps, GTM Ops, Marketing Ops, Sales Ops. I think a GTM engineer is effectively a RevOps person, to be honest, or a Marketing Ops person. Just that previously you come from market or build. Previously they were building audiences in market or within the technologies that the systems team generated. Now they're building audiences in Clay. They are doing enrichment in Clay. So the role above that systems team is that of an architect. You can even call them a revenue architect, a GTM architect. But they're really good at connecting systems and technology and process to business outcomes. And that is because they understand that area of business really well. And the role above that then is the field teams, the SDRs, the CSMs, the AEs, who are ultimately going to use the architecture that the revenue engineers have built so that they can be successful. So what we'll find is with AI, systems team will have to become AI first. RevOps team will have to become really good with understanding how AI can create leverage. So now you're not uploading hundreds of thousands of audiences manually, but you're using technology to pull them directly. So you will have to use AI to simplify go-to-market. And then there are field teams, and field teams will have this very powerful sidekick in AI that will increase their productivity. And if you're going to fight it, you'll be replaced by someone who is AI native and knows how to use AI and will be significantly more productive than you.
It's such an interesting point of view. I was speaking with someone earlier this week about that when I came out of college and went to go work in sales, all the applications that I had were homegrown, internal built. And what you just described was very similar. So we had IT that we went to, which was that system layer that would build those things. And then we had a couple of people in the organization, in the actual sales organization that, hey, when I hit a challenge, when I hit a blocker, they were the ones we went to that would help us fix or would fix things.
Yes.
And then there was us in the actual roles. And it's interesting listening to you describe that format, because today, as I apply it, we're going to have systems that we bought and we're going to have systems that we built, and
Yes.
they're going to mesh and integrate together. And so listening to those roles, that makes a lot of sense to me. Another area that I think is really worth touching on here, Gaurav, is measurement. As I mentioned earlier in the podcast, Gaurav and I were at the same event earlier this week, and we heard a public company CMO speak about her team, and she said they are doing some tasks in a week that used to take 3 weeks. Her comment was really interesting. It wasn't that AI may take, her comment was AI. How'd she say it? Her concern wasn't that AI was going to take jobs. It was that someone won't be able to do their job without AI. That was probably the right way. So Gaurav, I'm curious about measurement of all of this. So I work with a partner here at Battery named Joe Chernoff, who's a former CMO at Pendo. And he and I have talked a lot about metrics. And we've been having this ongoing riff on, will there be this new set of post AI metrics that emerge? That's not what I want to talk about, though. We've been having that discussion. But we've been riffing, though, that the current metrics that exist that we track a traditional SaaS company that's now evolving into an AI company, the larger impact there will be on those current ones that we measure. And the difference will be that the expectations of what is considered good will increase. So going back to that public company CMO of saying things that took 3 weeks now should take a week. Do you have a
Yes.
point of view here? How do you think about this on measurement?
Yeah, I see it very much the same. I think what will happen is jobs will transform. It's like let's use the pre-computer era. Everyone was working out of pen and paper, out of files. You perhaps had a lot more people needed to process the same amount of information, but with computers, you can process that information really quickly. You could argue that there are fewer people employed in those kinds of professions, but there are newer types of jobs that have opened up because of the breakthrough with technology, right? So what that means is the work that we do today will get done much faster, with more efficiency, with a higher degree of accuracy. And that means if you are processing 10 requests today, you have to be able to get to a place, whatever those requests may be, or 10 type, if you're doing 10 pieces of knowledge work today with AI, you'll be able to process 100. It's exactly the same from like moving from a pen and paper era to a computer era. You end up doing a lot more. And that is exactly what will happen with AI, where each one of us will have to do a lot more. And it would not feel abnormal to do a lot more, because you will transition into that role. You will, over time, you will grow into that role. It's the same way as, again, like if I use pen and paper, I don't think about how unproductive I was with pen and paper now, because I'm just used to this new normal where I use the internet, right. I use technology. And I think that's what will happen with AI. So if you don't fight it and just grow with it, you will come to appreciate all the productivity gains. The problem is when you fight it and you're like, I'm not going to use my computer because computers can be hacked. So I'm going to use my pen and paper. Great. Then what you will find is 5 years from now, you will wake up in a scenario where that other person is able to do like 5 times, 10 times more work than you, and you'll be unemployable. So I don't think it's going to be as bad as people are making it out to be. But you have to be able to absorb into the change. And if the entire world is going there, be a part of that versus try to fight it. I just trying to bring it back to the measurability question that you asked, Bill. The biggest gain we will see is productivity. Across all different types of jobs, people will be able to be more productive. They'll get more done faster. They'll have more time to go spend with their families, go pursue hobbies that they've wanted to do. AI will make you more productive, and because of that, your quality of life should also go up.
I spend a lot of time with students. I give back my time to trying to lecture, to mentor with a lot of students. And this has been an ongoing theme that I've been trying to share with them is I do a quick little pop quiz on how AI native are they? And they're surprisingly good. But occasionally I catch the laggards. And the laggards, I try to give this exact same message, which is, wow, there are so many new roles that are going to get created and become jobs that you can apply for. And you are the perfect, you're the ideal person for this type of role, because it's not going to be somebody with years of experience. It's going to be someone with a certain type of experience. And so I really, I try to impress upon them to think about what you just talked about from that perspective. But on the measurement side, this is what I'm really paying attention to right now, is I think that some companies struggle to try and figure out, how are we going to measure this? Is it a cost savings? Is it a lift or an increase in something like revenue, or in like whatever you're measured on from a performance perspective? Is there a productivity? You really got to that at the end of your comments there. Is there a productivity one? So I've been spending a lot of time looking into that measurement area. And that's why I said it's an ongoing conversation that Joe and I have inside of Battery, because we want to help guide our companies on where this is going.
Yeah, 100%. I think it comes down to, here's one of the other realizations, right? AI won't fix what you don't know. So if you have a workflow in mind that, okay, how do I get onboarding faster? How do I close my deals faster? How do I qualify better? How do I ramp my reps better? If you have a workflow in mind, if you have a use case in mind, AI would allow you to do that better and faster. But AI won't just magically. The biggest risk that organizations carry today is you assume that because you have AI, AI will come in and fix processes and like organizational misalignments that you have. Because AI is a catalyst. AI is not this net new shiny thing that will suddenly show you the way. AI is a catalyst. And that means, if you have bad systems, bad processes, bad data, AI would hurt you. Like AI would hurt you a lot. The last thing you want is AI hallucinating on top of bad data, making up numbers that are not true, making up features that are not existent. And what that means is, if you know what you're trying to solve for, your KPI would be, is that problem being solved better and faster now?
Gosh, I feel like I'm in a master class here with you, Gaurav. The customer impact. We've talked so far about what's going on inside of organizations, inside the go-to-market, but let's step outside and go to our customers, because go-to-market orgs exist to go and acquire and then expand and keep their customers. So let's talk about the customer side. So there are a lot of professionals out there and companies that existed pre-AI. And what I'll just for simplicity's sake define that as is call it 2023 was kind of the eyes open portion of AI. Most of those companies have started developing AI into their products. And you see that with labels like we're AI powered or enabled by AI. And so the question I'm curious about and the question I'd like to get your take on is when I go meet those companies, I always ask, well, you had a value proposition that existed before AI. Is your value proposition post AI better? Is there something that is that AI is helping you unlock inside of your product? I'd love to get your take on how people think about making that transition from the pre-AI true SaaS world over to the post-AI and how that evolution happens.
And you mean that question from a business perspective, right? Like if you're an entrepreneur, you're an operator, you have a business. Yeah. Oftentimes when I think about these things, I actually take a 10-year view because it's much easier to observe the future 10 years out and not fight it versus observe the try to predict what's going to happen in 2 years. In 10 years, software, and I think this would happen sooner than 10 years, maybe 5 years, but the world of software and AI will merge. It's like on-prem going to cloud. Ultimately, software is now delivered through cloud. And then in some edge cases, you still have on-prem. I think we will see something very similar where AI and software worlds will merge. And that will generate compounding benefit for your customers because your customers will want that. So if you're building a software that caters to the pet industry, let's go with that. Your customers will want to be able to do more. New needs would arise. They would want a higher degree of service, more use cases delivered faster to them, more accurately. So you will have to find a way. It's almost like I read this somewhere. You're actually building two companies right now. If you're starting a new company, great. You are extremely lucky. You don't have that problem. But for a lot of us that are already in the middle of something, we have a business that we are running. The business is doing well. You have to run that business while simultaneously figuring out what the AI version of your business looks like. And then slowly transition this big mothership into that new world. And you can't do it as an extra layer of features that you have added. You have to go deep inside how your product is built and how would you slowly tilt it towards that AI native future. And it's not just product, it's how your company operates. How do you deliver customer service? How do you go sell the product? How are you generating marketing content? Because the truth is the new incumbents would always be AI native from the get-go. So I don't want to paint this doom and gloom picture, but the change that you will have to go through in the next 2-3 years is significantly higher than anything that you have seen because it has to go down right to that DNA of your company. And you will have to do it because your customers will demand it. And when your customers demand it and you don't offer that, someone else will offer that because the cost of producing software is coming down so low that at the end, the sooner you acknowledge that you have to make that tilt and start talking to your customers. And here is the mistake that people can do. A lot of people think just adding AI features and a ChatGPT layer wrapper on top of that makes them AI native. No, that makes you feel good, but does that make your customer feel good? And if your customer is not feeling good about it, then you're going to lose it because you think you have become an AI native, but you should be talking to your customers, trying to figure out in this problem set that I'm trying to solve for you, how is that evolving? What new features do you want? How do you want to solve that problem in the AI era? And build for the customer. Don't build for the product you have. Build for the customer who needs a certain type of product that is different than the product you have. And if you can be intellectually honest about it, you will win. But if you don't focus on the customer and focus on yourself, you will lose.
A wealth of thoughts there. And you know, the things that really, really resonate with me there are, I think you're absolutely right. First of all, a lot of companies are getting their product to look and act more like AI because over the last couple of years, we've all been experimenting with it and training ourselves up on it. But I love the customer focus and working backwards from there. That's where I really react well, which is I think what product teams need to think about is we're not going to do AI for AI's sake. We're going to do AI because it's going to drive some incremental benefit. And that incremental piece to me is, like I said earlier, we had a product. It worked really well. We added really good value to our customers. Now, these next products or these next features that we build, if we're going to build them in an agentic type of way, they should probably help our customers in some place that it didn't previously. And that would be the additional or the additive gain that they get to. So I think looking at it from that perspective, and that's exactly the question I was asking, really, is how you think about that. Because like I said, like if you're a company today that you're starting today, it seems like a really exciting time to me to be doing that. But if you're a company that existed before and you have that code base, you have all that history, you have all those customers that have a certain expectation, to me, the next question is, how do I build the next stage of my company so that it transitions from the traditional SaaS model into the AI world?
100%. Exactly. And I think this is, on the flip side, the positive of this is a lot of market cap would move. Big public market. It's like the rise of e-commerce in retail. Some retailers didn't quite understand what that e-commerce wave truly meant and had like these boring, clunky websites that no one wants to buy from. And some retails truly became omni-channel experiences. So don't try to be that retail company that fought e-commerce, number one. Second, if you try to do it, don't just think that building a website is enough and you don't need great experiences. So don't just think you first, think customer first, and be a target if you want to survive the retail apocalypse. But don't try to be a Sears, because that would not serve you well.
At this current stage of what's happening in technology, compared to like my experience, I feel like a beginner. I feel like a beginner in this world right now. I just feel like such a student mindset of learning. And as much as I try to consume, I feel like I never get ahead. It's like that poor kid in the class. It feels like they're going to go to the test and not do well. That's my paranoia right now.
I think a lot of that is you being Bill. You're so humble. You're such an accomplished leader, Bill. And all of us look up to you as our mentor, but you are so curious, and that is the energy you bring to the room. And honestly, I think curiosity is a real moat as individuals right now. If the world around you is changing, previously the world around you would have changed in 2 decades. Then last decade, it started like in more recent times, it's been changing fast. With AI, it's changing every few years. People are not even thinking about decades. So when the world around you is changing every 3-4 years, being curious and being a true learner is inherently a superpower. And the problem is...
Oh, thank you.
The problem is, as the higher up a person gets in their career, they think they've accomplished so much and they have so much to offer that they get arrogant about knowledge. And that's one of the worst places you can be in, because the moment you get arrogant about something, you stop inviting change. And personally, I think growth mindset is one of the biggest virtues and intellectual curiosity that will shape the leaders of tomorrow.
First of all, thank you for those comments. Those obviously they hit hard and they sound they feel good to hear. So thank you for that. I have a mentor who tuned me into this concept of careers, which is called learn, earn, and return. And he says, your career starts in one and then continues. You start in the learning phase where you're learning, you're picking up skills, you're gaining your mastery at what you do. And then at some point you shift into the earning stage. Now you don't give up learning, you carry that with you, but you go into the earning stage. And earning is where you start earning your reputation for being an expert at something, for being good at something, and maybe hopefully earning money as well. And then at some point you get into your return stage where you didn't go through those stages alone. Someone else was there giving you ideas, pushing you along, coaching you. And so you go into that stage where you start returning it back. And so I think about that paradigm or that kind of framework for career growth and stuff like that. And you've heard me say this before, Gaurav, I don't want to be the SaaS guy in an AI world, right? I don't want to be stuck in a certain place. And so that curiosity, that willingness to always learn, I think is a super critical skill set that we all have to work on. And like, look, I'll be the first to say there are times that I thought I was the expert and I probably wasn't in my best curiosity mode. But now, like I said, I'm just in this stage where anybody and everyone that I can talk to that help me tune myself up on what that, to me, it's benefiting me. And then importantly, it's benefiting in my role at Battery, being able to go talk with portfolio companies and share what other people are seeing, what they're experiencing, and being able to help guide them to hopefully be successful in it.
Yeah, that's so great, Bill. I mean, separate from this, I think what's that saying, Bill, that they say, the more I know about something, I realize the less I know about it. Like it's that curve, right? Where people, first time they think that they know it all. And then the more they realize about it, they realize they actually don't know anything. And now they become those intellectually honest learners, which is a great place to be. It's so beautiful to meet people like that.
Yeah, there's a book that, you know, people asked to me, pencils down, favorite couple of business books. There's a book out there called Multipliers by a woman named Liz Wiseman wrote it. And that's my favorite book. But her second book after that one was called Rookie Smarts. And it was about this concept that as we advance ourselves, like the more I know, the less I actually know, the more I know, I lock in and I get comfortable because I have the experience, because I have the knowledge, because I have the wisdom. And that book, Rookie Smarts, was really about challenging yourself to go back to when you're young and what you had was fire. You had desire. Yes. You just had like energy to want to come and bring it, but you might not have any of the experience, but you know what? You had the energy and you were fearless as well. So I'm a total prescriber of those concepts.
100%.
Well, Gaurav, really big topics that we chased after today. I want to thank you for coming on the podcast and just sharing your intellect and your experiences of what you're seeing out there. As you and I have interacted over the last couple of months, as I said at the beginning of the session today, I was super excited to have you come and share some of the learning. So appreciate you joining me on Sound Bites and thanks so much for carving out the time out of your day.
The pleasure is all mine, Bill. Thank you so much for having me. A great chat.